The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes. Frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. Joining us as always is Dan Trillaro. Danny's moved on to a new gig now with a company called IC360. And Dan, just real quick, what does IC360 do?
Sure. Yeah, IC360 is the merger between Odds On Compliance and U.S. Integrity. I joined the U.S. Integrity side, which pretty much does integrity monitoring, compliance, and education now, which will I be heading up the education division for U.S. Integrity to help athletes understand what makes them vulnerable, to help keep them safe, and we'll be using case studies to kind of go a little bit deeper in the education side. So pretty much running the education division for the newly formed company, IC360. It's a global company, so I'll be heading up most of the North America and South America division.
Well, congratulations on that. Happy for you, and it sounds like a great place for you to be. Also joining us today is Robert, a gambler in recovery, like myself and Dan. Robert, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Craig. Everything's well. Thank you.
Great. What was the date of your last wager?
It's August 22nd of 2023, so I'm coming up on 9 months of sobriety.
Yes. Well, congratulations on that. Very proud of that. Proud of you. And I got to imagine that life's pretty damn good today as compared to about 10 months ago, yeah?
Life is much better today than it was before I decided to stop gambling for good.
Well, let's get into your story a little bit. We'll start at the beginning as best we can. How old were you when you first were exposed to any type of gambling?
I was 18. And so when I was 18, I got married, had a kid, joined the Army.
Wow.
And they went ahead and sent me over to Japan, and they had slot machines on base, and as well as the Japanese, they had a lot of pachinko games, but I wasn't really into the pachinko so much as I was the slot machines.
And this was on the military base?
Yeah, right on the installation. They have them in the overseas installations. And the money that is raised supports the MWR, the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation Fund.
So walk me through, if you're going to wager on a military basis on foreign land, do you bring cash or could you just take the check that you were going to get and just have the check sent to a gambling account? How's that work?
Yeah, well, it was all done by cash. You were paid out with cash and... As far as I remember, there were no taxes included with it, but it still goes on today. And you know, I really think that the military, takes advantage, or they don't understand that they're taking advantage of soldiers and airmen that are young, don't have their brains formed immediately, and you get caught up with this gambling, much like sports betting.
So give me an idea, when you're a young man who's obviously serving his country overseas, and thank you for that service, and you're now, finding yourself in front of a slot machine, give us an idea of what kind of play. Like, was it all day, every day when you weren't in some type of active duty, and give us an idea of how it kind of manifested itself out there?
Well, it was pretty much, outside of the shifts. When I was in active duty, 9/11 happened. Right in the middle of it, and so I didn't have as much time to gamble. But I mean, the key was that I was spending time away from my young family, in front of these slot machines, and so that was not advantageous at all.
So at the height of it, before you come back home, if you had, and I'm making this up, of course, if you had a 24-hour furlough. Of that 24 hours, how much time would you spend in front of a slot machine?
Oh, yeah. Probably at least eight hours in front of it. Yeah.
All right. So did it affect your performance in the military? Did it become a problem for you while you were on active duty?
It did. It did. I actually had an issue with, the physical fitness requirements And so at that time, it was 2 mile run, push ups and sit ups. And the run was an issue for me. Mm-hmm. So I think that if I would have not had the gambling issue, I would have been able to spend more time in the gym, you know, working out, and not have that, you know, physical fitness issue as much.
And walk me through what you're dealing with at home with, a young wife, a child as well. Was your wife immediately hip to the fact that you were now spending an inordinate amount of time on whether, you know, any kind of gambling, but in your case, you know, slot machines? Did she know about it? How did that come about?
Yeah, she definitely knew about it. And it wasn't so much in it as, you know, when you're overseas, your housing is paid for, you know, the electricity is paid for, and you don't really have to adult as much. But yeah, she definitely knew about it. And it was an issue. We divorced about 4 years ago, and we were married for 20 years. And the gambling was definitely a big issue in our marriage.
Let me stop you there and bring Dan. And, you know, Dan, I tell people, as you do, you know, that gambling fits the personality profile of a lot of, you know, competitive athletes, which is why you've spent the last couple of years of your life touring, you know, college campuses, specifically talking to athletes on college campuses. That's why I'm on a college tour talking to people, a lot of them, you know, athletes, because it fits the kind of mentality of, you know, I want to compete. I'm a type A guy or gal, and I don't like to lose. And if I lose, I'm going to fight back and show you that I can win. But we never talk about the military. And I wonder, yep, you know, in your experience over the last 4 or 5 years and now with this new venture you're involved with, you know, what's your take on military folks getting involved in this?
Yeah, Robert, first, thanks for your service. You know, when you talk about September 11th, I was working downtown New York City on that day, lost a lot of friends. That's what ultimately set me off on my run of gambling for 8.5 years, led to some prison time. You know, military is something that you just highlighted, Robert. You know, there's gambling on bases. There's gambling all around. And so you're in a high-pressure situation. You're in a high-pressure environment. You have to be on the ready at any point in time. Again, certain personality traits, right? Even, like, seeing things through to completion is one of the other personality traits that you start to see, whether it's athletics or whether it's people who serve our country. You know, you've been trained a certain way. You've practiced over and over, and you're getting better. And we tend to apply that then to the world of gambling. You know, it doesn't work like that, though. We think the more we practice, the more we do it, we're going to get it right eventually. And when we see even our service members who've then returned from active duty and are now our veterans who just don't receive the support services, and gambling is a way to pass time. It's a way to still stay coherent, right, without drinking or taking drugs. You're gambling. You're passing time. It's camaraderie. And it alleviates stress. It alleviates those feelings of uncertainty and any stressors in our life. So we see a huge gambling issue amongst our active duty and our veteran population with a lack of services, Craig. And, you know, Robert, yeah, you know, you could probably speak to that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And even to this day, you know, inside the Pentagon, you know, they sell Virginia Lottery tickets and scratch-offs now at the small snack bars inside the Pentagon. And so it's definitely a societal issue. And even though I've never got into sports betting so much, you know, that's even more prominent now than it used to be too. And it's so easy to do.
Obviously you come home from active duty, from service, at least abroad, and you are building a family, right? Cause you know, you're divorced. You were married, pardon me, for 20 years. Walk me through what happened when you got home and you're continuing to gamble throughout your marriage once you came back stateside.
Well, I did 4 years active duty and then decided to apply for a position within government as a civilian and found myself back in Japan as a civilian, now on a Navy base. And this was 8 years later, and the slot machines were still there. And so I went back to the same thing that I was doing as a young soldier. Although I was older, I had more kids. I had gained 2 additional kids by then. And so that's the key. If you don't stop the gambling, it will continue for the rest of your life. You know, no matter what going around you, no matter what life is going by,
sure.
No matter who is passing away, or you know, your friends that you gain or lose, you know, if you don't quit gambling, it will continue throughout your life.
Now, a lot of people in all of our positions, you know, people who lost control of their ability to gamble responsibly and recreationally, have what amounts to kind of a bottom of the barrel moment. You know, that night that you look back on with regret, that made you go get help, that may even have saved your life. And I wonder for you, if you don't mind sharing, was there a moment like that, your final straw, where you had gone through a divorce, so that happened in your life, but still 4 years or so, 3 years prior to you getting help. So I'm wondering for you, why'd you wake up one day and decide, okay, today's the day I'm going to try to figure this thing out, take ownership of it, and get myself some help?
Well, that's a good question, and I fought it many, many times. You know, I had gone to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, which was an hour away, and I thought, maybe I could still control this thing. You know, maybe if I go into the casino during a certain time, or if I listen to the regulars, or if I pay attention, and maybe if I just take this amount of money. But it never happened. I always racked up credit card debt. And then when I was done with that, got a personal loan. And then got to the point where the credit score was severely lowered. And, you know, it was reaching a point in which it was concerning. And, you know, having a security clearance, working for the government. But then again, just finding out, like, I was spending time away from my family, not concerned about those who loved me so much. And I guess a really prominent turning point for me was when my dad passed away last year, and they were passing around a hat, you know, to have donations for the pastor who was officiating, and I just didn't find myself with any extra money in order to donate. And my dad knew it was an issue, and even though gambling is pretty much a secret addiction, it comes out when you're not paying your bills, when you're borrowing money, when you're selling things that may be like family heirlooms, you know. So that was the point. I remember, you know, being in front of a machine at a local casino, and just, it was a few days before my birthday, and I had spent everything, and I found myself with this inability to even, you know, swallow. I wanted to get a drink of water. My throat was dry. I can still remember that feeling. And so excluding from gambling was my birthday present to myself.
Take a break right on that note. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Dan Trelawer joins us as always, and Robert's sharing his story about, you know, gambling for a long period of time and then essentially waking up one day and saying, enough's enough, I'm going to try to stop. A lot of people that try to stop, myself included, Dan included, Robert, are unsuccessful the first time, the second, third, fourth, fifth time. Were you successful when you decided, you know, as a birthday present to yourself that you were going to try to live without gambling and get yourself some help? At any point, did you, quote unquote, relapse, or have you been consistent from the day you made that decision?
I've been consistent since the day I made that decision.
Good for you.
That's great.
And I've thought about it. Truly, I have thought about it.
Sure.
I saw what it did to my mom, who had a gambling addiction, and she later had a shopping addiction afterwards.
Let me stop you there. Did you and your mom ever discuss the fact that she had a gambling addiction and you did as well, or no?
Yeah, we absolutely did. That was a really good present that she gave me. We were in the car once and we were going to, you know, go find some cookies, her favorite cookies. And she said to me, she said, the only way to stop is to exclude yourself. And she didn't really give me much life advice before then, you know, hence having a kid at the age of 18, marrying somebody I didn't even really know, et cetera. But when she gave me that advice, that's exactly what I needed. I needed someone to say, look, this is a problem for you, and the only way to get out of it is by self-excluding.
So when you went into that first meeting and you self-excluded, and let me just walk people through that. Self-exclusion, you're basically telling either bricks and mortar casinos in a particular state or online wagering now nationwide amongst, I think it's 6 or 7 of the top sports wagering books out there like FanDuel and DraftKings and Fanatics and BetMGM, et cetera, have all gotten together. And they now will share information of people that self-exclude so that if you self-exclude on FanDuel, all the other operators will honor that, which makes it a lot easier, actually, for people like us to help themselves and really stay out of harm's way. Because in the old days, meaning like 3 months ago, you could self-exclude from one place and you could still go wager on 5 other places. So the fact that, you know, I think it's 7, Dan, if I'm not mistaken, of the largest operators in the country have gotten together. Yep. In a great show of solidarity in honoring the self-exclusion that a customer has on any one of those 7 sites, which is a really big deal for those of us in this world. So you self-exclude, which is great. When you start life like day one without gambling, did you treat it as, if I can just get through today, that's a win, and I'll worry about tomorrow? Or were you thinking about it more globally than that, which is, I'm never going to gamble again, and that starts today?
I had a real problem accepting the fact that, you know, I would always have this illness, and that if I'm excluding today, that means I have to exclude and stop gambling for the rest of my life. I really fought that. And so that's why, you know, going to Gamblers Anonymous the first time didn't work, because, you know, I thought I was different, or I wanted to be different, right, from everyone else. And then you realize, okay, well, you're part of at least 10% of the population that, you know, that has an issue. And I never had a substance issue, only this addiction.
Right.
Yeah, I basically had to just go day by day. And then,
what
then
did
the
you
credit score started rising up.
Sure.
Bills started getting paid.
Now, it really is amazing, right, Dan, where when you all of a sudden commit yourself to not gambling, how the things that, you know, create themselves as, you know, like black clouds over your head, all of a sudden and pretty quickly, you start dissipating. Like, you get your bills paid. You've got a couple bucks in the bank. You can buy yourself a dinner once in a while. You can go to a movie. You can make your car payment. And it's so simple, but it all starts with not shoving your money into a slot machine on a blackjack table or on a sports event, right?
Yeah, and, you know, there's so much about the story that's really hitting, especially this weekend with Mother's Day. You know, the fact that you had that conversation with your mom, it makes me think about the time when, you know, to Craig, to your point, like, the bad builds upon the bad, but the good can build upon the good, you know, one step, one day at a time. And I remember thinking, I had a hard time also thinking, I'll never be able to do this thing again that I've invested so much time and energy into, and money, obviously, into. To think that I'll never be able, and I almost felt like a failure, right? Because we're conditioned to, like, right, think if we practice and we'll get better, and this is now a part of my life. And I always thought before I went to prison that I'll someday gamble again. And the day that I realized I wasn't going to be able to do that was the day I was sentenced. And when they put the handcuffs on me behind my back and they escorted me out of Morris County Courthouse, I heard my mom crying in the back. That was the day that I knew I was done. And I, just as we're talking, it just really just hit me. You know, whether it's the weekend, whether it's the story, that's just really what's hitting me right now.
Robert, what have you done to fill the void?
You know, I mean, I go to the gym quite a bit. You know, I spend time with my kids. My kids now are 12, 23, 21, and 14. And so, I mean, they're cool young adults to hang out with, and they have their own hobbies and that kind of thing. And then, you know, I help others as well. I give back. And, you know, Dan's point about Mother's Day right around the corner, I lost my mom in March. And so it was really rewarding for me to be able to, you know, tell her, you know, I showed her my 6 month, you know, key tag right. and everything. And, you know, to show her that I was able to be successful in quitting gambling. And as a result, you know, there's a significant amount of money that's coming out of that. And I'm able to pay off, basically, all of the debt, not only obtained from gambling, but just, you know, obtained from life. And so I'm in therapy. You know, I speak to a therapist, you know, every few weeks, and then I have a financial therapist that's helping me navigate it financially.
Great.
And then I also give back. I've created a website, and in conjunction with a peer recovery specialist, I started a Gamblers Anonymous meeting in my area in Richmond, Virginia, which we had not had a in-person meeting until before COVID, and now we have two meetings a week.
I think it's great. And listen, and you need to hear this, and Dan will say it as well. Yo, I'm proud of you. You know, people don't understand how hard it is to kind of meet the demon and the addiction head on. You know, you can overcome it, but you got to be willing to meet it head on and take ownership of a lot of the mistakes you've made and be really honest with yourself and family members and loved ones that you are the problem. No one else is the problem. It's us. And until you're able to own that and accept that and be honest about that, it's very hard to recover or get into recovery. And it just sounds so great that you're doing well and you're able to save some money and you're paying off whatever debts you have. And I can just hear in your voice, you know, having a relationship with your three kids, two of them who are adults now, and one who's obviously on the way, I'm sure, you know, fills your heart up with joy. And, you know, I'm sure there are moments you look back on life with clarity now and you want to beat yourself up about it. But here's the good news as I preach here just for a second. You know, it's never too late to start. You know, whether you're 50 years old, 20 years old, in between, or older, whatever it is, it's never too late to start trying to right the wrongs. And while none of us can maybe get everything back, relationship-wise, financially, et cetera, it's never too late to start. And hearing you now almost a year in, 10 months, 9, 10 months into your recovery, there's no doubt that you're going to make it to a year and beyond. And I appreciate you sharing your story. Appreciate your service, of course, to our country from a military standpoint. And I'm really grateful that you shared your story. I think it's great that you're sharing it with other people, and I hope that you continue to do that. And we really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Craig, and thanks, Dan, for all that you do. Very much appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Be well, and in your mom's honor, I hope you're able to enjoy Mother's Day on Sunday coming up, you know, tomorrow, and appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hi, Dan, before we get out of here, you know, it's an interesting point he brought up and you doubled on, which is, you know, Mother's Day is tomorrow. And obviously you know, hearing your mom, you know, distinctly hearing her cry in the background as you were experiencing, you know, the worst moment of your life. And I know what it was like, you know, being in court and seeing my mom in a wheelchair in my criminal case and having a hard time looking her and other people in the eye. Because yeah. I had, you know, embarrassed the family name and put them through hell. I think it's a good moment for you and for me and for Robert to acknowledge the pain that we do cause in the people closest to us.
Yeah, you know, and it's a time where we say sorry. Sometimes, Craig, you know, especially early on, the words aren't enough. Because our loved ones, the ones that are closest to us, you know, we lied to, we hurt them the most, and they've heard so many words in that moment out of our mouth, that it really does come back to its actions, right? Every day, you know, what are we doing? The phrase I like to talk about is, you know, what are we doing to be that, just that 1% better each day in any area of our life? You know, whether it's relationships, whether it's nutrition, whether it's sleep, whether it's with ourselves, our mental health, it comes down to the actions, because our work, Honestly, Craig, the words got so cheap, really. They really did. The lying, the deceitfulness, looking people in the eyes was really hard. Even looking in the mirror, I couldn't even look in a mirror in the worst part of it. And so just being thankful, I think, on this stage of the journey, you know, with you and with the guests that we have on this show, that we're able to do this and do this together and have people share their story and become vulnerable so that others can see it's okay to be vulnerable and it won't feel that badly forever if you just take that first step and ask for help.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that I've taken out of it is that there are going to be people, especially for me, because, you know, what my job is, there are always going to be people that want to remind you of all the mistakes you made and remind you about, you know, losing your freedom, going to prison, you know, putting yourself in harm's way, making really bad decisions. And, you know, they want to mock you for it, put you down for it, et cetera, et cetera. And while it's not okay, it's okay. Because there's enough people that do support you that you should focus on them and not the people that want to always bring you down and remind you about your lowest points. And I've said this a million times over the 4 years of this show. You know, I have contemplated in my life what my what the eulogy about me is going to be, what you recall in the newspaper, the obituary is going to be, you know, when I'm dead and gone. And I've always said this, that, you know, it's not fair for me to expect that the obituary starts with my greatest hits, right? I also don't think it's fair that it starts with the worst moments of my life. And it's something that I am sensitive to because it's all a part of my life. And I know full well more than anyone, because, again, being a public figure on TV and radio, that it's always great for other people to lead with the negative. And I fight that tooth and nail because I don't think that's a fair representation of my life's body of work, good and bad. And I hope that I do enough good post-bad where at least someone will tell the story that he took the worst possible thing that he ever could have experienced, all of it self-inflicted. I blame nobody for what I did and what I put myself and my family through, but used it to make the world a better place, to help other people, to pay it forward, and did everything he could to try to change the narrative. And I think more people need to start viewing recovery in that way, because if you only focus on the hurt you've caused, it's very hard to get out of your own way because, you know, it's all negative and you'll be an emotional wreck and you won't see the silver lining or the light at the end of the tunnel. And I do think it's important for people at the beginning of recovery to recognize that there is that light and it's okay to focus on it. To all the moms out there, of course, happy Mother's Day. I get the great gift of seeing my second child graduate from college this weekend. So very much looking forward to that. And we'll do this again next Saturday. Have a great day. Joe Beningo is next. And thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.